My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Everyone, new week, new episode of the show. This is a fun one. We got the Flashback 64 crew back on with Gu and McKenna, and we answer the question, what is our favorite gaming adaptation? So taking a video game and bringing it over to another form of entertainment, whether that's book, movie, TV show, comic, cell phone advertisement, whatever. We kind of discussed that and had some fun. So enjoy the episode. A little business up front. My Kickstarter is running for 8 more days. So next week's episode will be the last chance to remind y'all to support that book if you can. It is The Unofficial History of Final Fight, Beat 'em Up Volume 1. The link will be in the show notes as well. You can check that out. Even if it's not something you can financially support, like helping to spread the word and share the link on social media and things goes a long way. So I appreciate all the support. It's been going great. And this has been probably my favorite project I've worked on so far, which every time I do a new project, that one takes over the last one. So I guess the creativity continues to flow, and this is still a worthwhile endeavor to do. So I appreciate y'all. Let's have some fun and keep doing more. The Patreon has been updated. I've posted a new article or two on there in the last couple weeks, but also the digital store. That is where you can buy all of the digital goods that I have. So you can now get Retro Game Zine issue 1 there, but also 32-bit library volume 1 through 4. That is the best way to buy them digitally. It's the only official way to buy them digitally. And my only recommendation, if you do plan to buy it through like a web browser. There is like a tax if you try and buy it through like the iPhone app. And it's just like an Apple App Store, like additional cost thing. That money doesn't go to me or anything. So you can save yourself some money and make it a little bit easier if you do easier on yourself if you order it through the web. The PDFs and all that stuff get emailed to you right from it. So patreon.com/Darren Hupke, links again on the show notes. And then pixelsandpolygons.net, my website, is where you can directly order from me like physical books. So again, Retro Game Zine number 1 is the newest thing there, but you can get physical copies of 32-bit library 1 through 4. I also have like stickers and pins. I usually sell those at like the conventions and stuff that I go to. They were like, you know, Kickstarter goods that I made like during the Kickstarter process, but like stickers and pins and all that, those extra goodies that were a part of that, you can actually add those to your order. You can't get those if you buy it through Amazon, which it's also available through Amazon. So also check those links all in the show notes and everything there. Exact same stuff I usually talk about, still need to talk about it. And that's it. So the episode this week is pretty fun. The topic, like I said, is favorite video game adaptation. So listen to it, enjoy it. And if you like it, tell a friend. Other than that, that's all I got for you. We will see you all again next week for another new episode. Bye. Cool. Well, welcome to another episode. As you can hear, we have the Flashback 64 crew with me. It's just me. It's a solo show. Gu and McKenna are here. Welcome. Thanks for coming back into another episode, y'all.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Good to be back.
Yeah. So I have reconfigured the show to be a little bit simpler, so it's easier for me to edit. It's not out of laziness or anything, but you know, if I can make my life easier, I would like to make it easier. So we just do the solo guest treatment. So we will, just chat, answer the question, and then this will be the complete episode. I'll actually be putting it out this Friday, so it'll be from the cutting room floor to being released in just a couple of hours. So you'll be this week's guest. So,
That's fresh, thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So we'll do just a couple questions just to catch us up on what y'all been doing. An icebreaker where I'll try and, you know, stump you, and then we'll get into the main topic. So what have y'all been up to lately? I mean, I know you're cruising along with your podcast and Patreon and everything, but any cool projects or any cool things y'all want to share that you've been working on lately?
Anything from you? I mean, you're working pretty hard on a lot of videos and stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to do a couple YouTube videos where I like play a few different games with like a, but I have like a certain theme. Like I'm doing a snow day video where I play just like, you know, a life sim where it's snowing during the day, just something to put on, be cozy,
match the vibe of what's going on outside.
yeah
You've done that with like different seasons and
I've done a few like that. Mm-hmm. Done like a fall one, a rainy day one,
and those are already out and on YouTube.
Those other ones are, I'm still working on the second snow day one.
Okay. Well, you should send me the link, and I'll put it in the show notes so people can check it out and everything. My 10 of listeners can, you know, maybe explore and find something new then.
All right.
10 of listeners. There's no plural there.
Hello, all 10. Yeah. I don't have anything specific. Like, I feel like the main... I have some other stuff, but it's been... Post New Year's, we haven't fully gotten back into the swing of things, and the only thing I have really been working on lately is just Flashback 64 stuff, I feel like. So
we have another secret thing you're working on, right? Isn't there a secret thing? Maybe it's not announced, but the thing you asked me about. I'm not gonna say anything about it, but I do know something happening.
I'm gonna ask you some more questions actually. But yeah, I can't do it right now.
Yeah. Not when it's being recorded. I'm under an NDA to not talk about Goo's secret project.
I've got secrets. I'd like to promote my secrets. Yeah.
There's a really cool thing happening. If you like cool stuff, it's going to be cool, and it's all you need to know. Link when it is available, because it's not now. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can get you stumped with an icebreaker or make it awkward.
Let's do it.
Let's see. We've asked some of these. These ones were still like the who would you be friends with growing up? I guess, well, let's just do this. What's your favorite time period or setting of a game? This one's not too bad.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, like in games that you play, like, is there a time period or a setting that you enjoy the most? Or is there one that like is usually will always kind of attract you or kind of like make you interested? Time period or setting.
Well, for me, because I feel like the majority of games I've played in my life have been like Zelda games. So, you know, it's like, I guess, whatever. It's not like a real time period, but, you know, it's kind of like a fantasy sort of setting. But I don't even know if I would say that's like my favorite overall type of setting. I don't know. When you say time period, I do kind of like games that are set in like pseudo historical time periods, like of any sort. Maybe that's too broad of an answer. Do you have a specific?
I just thought fantasy.
Fantasy,
basically, Or you know, anything with a lot of natural features is nice too. Because I just like walking around in games.
Oh, I know. I'm gonna say Dracula's Castle.
That's Dracula's my favorite. Castle, a very specific. Key destination, Dracula's Castle.
But it does apply to a lot of cool games, you know? That's a good setting, I think. I don't care what time period, just, you know, you could put it in the future, and, like, what's the one Castlevania game
Aria where, Sorrow like, and Dawn of Sorrow? Yeah.
It's like, it's the future, and you're like, whatever, but then Dracula's Castle shows up. So it could be any time period, but
I think it shows up via Eclipse. In those future ones, which I don't know what that means or how that means or anything, but there was an eclipse and then it appeared from it and then is in the real world and it's just his castle and 20
and then you find out you're Dracula or something.
You've I can't been remember Dracula all along. Yeah. The dream is within you. Yeah, they did a great
one. I don't know if that's a good answer, but that's what I'll go with.
I've wanted to replace some of those ones. They have that collection, but Don, the DS one, yeah. I don't think is in that digital collection. Or maybe it is. I always wanted to know how they would replicate drawing on the screen, because when you beat it a boss, beat it is not a word, just so you know. When you beat a boss, you would have to like draw like that little shape or like star or whatever like type of thing on the touchscreen for the DS. And so like, how do they emulate that on consoles?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. You could probably do it on Switch playing handheld, I guess, because it's got the touchscreen, but I don't know otherwise. Yeah. That's why we need
to bring... I know they did some of the... Like, they did the Zelda DS games on Wii U with the...
But not Switch, though. That's why we need to bring bring back the Wii U. We need the two screens.
Don't say that.
The Switch 2. I want two screen.
It's the system closest to... It's the system closest to rhyming with PU. And that's the sound of something that stinks, and that's the Wii U.
Yeah.
Great idea on paper. It was their prototype for their best thing yet with the Switch.
But yeah.
It is definitely not.
But we lost a little something with the two screen experience.
Playing like Wind Waker on there, it was a great experience.
Get the map down below.
I love the idea of it. I just don't think they ever delivered on what they really could have with that, you know? And then essentially, like, you had Breath of the Wild being like a game that was for that, but it took so long that it ended up being a Switch, you know, Twilight Princess situation with, you know, GameCube and Wii. You know, it was dual platform release. Right? That was Twilight Princess that did that, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
Mm-hmm. We have a Wii U. It's in my closet. It's got a bunch of amiibos in there. Pikmin of some kind is there, Pikmin 3. We just Lego City Undercover for the kids. But
I can see mine from here.
We've been using it to play Wii, actually. I think it's a better way to play Wii on, because it actually has HDMI, you know.
That makes sense. That's probably worth, now I'm slightly intrigued to maybe have that out and available, because there are some Wii games. I was listening to your Patreon exclusive currently, Mario Galaxy episode with the jamboree of guests and everything. And I realized I never finished Mario Galaxy. I do have that Switch collection. I could play it on the Switch, but just the conversation about using the actual Wii Remote Nunchuck and everything, like, I did like that a lot. And so I was thinking, I'd really like to play Galaxy, and I could do that via Wii U.
And, there you go. Yeah. That's one of the best things about the Wii U. It's a good Wii device, which I don't know if that's necessarily so great for it as a console, but yeah.
Its best feature is that it can be an older console. All right. Well, then let's move into the main topic. That icebreaker went a little faster, so that's good. I usually like to try and stump or make you think hard, but that was a fun one.
My response is to just start talking about something else. if I get stumped, you know, I just start talking about the Wii U or whatever.
Well, I mean, Dracula's Castle. I mean, we had the fantasy setting and Dracula's Castle as a very specific setting and location. So we succeeded, you know, we didn't have to dance around it. But for this episode, we want to ask the question of the day. What is your favorite gaming adaptation? So do you have a favorite gaming, like, movie, book, comic, TV show? I mean, at this point, like, there's so many different ways that gaming and video games historically have been kind of changed and evolved and adapted in other mediums. But yeah, do you have a favorite or one of your favorites that you'd like to maybe share, and why?
I think I know. I think I don't know what you're going to say, but you probably know what I'm going to say.
I told you what I was going to say.
Oh, you did? What was it? Well, okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
I picked Pokemon Concierge.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I just, you know, it's only a few episodes, but I just thought it was like a perfect show. It's just great vibes. The animation is beautiful. Really cool. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to, you know, adapt a game in a different kind of way. You know, you're not really have a game that where you're playing a concierge.
Well,
yeah.
Well, as somebody, obviously, I'm a video game player. I have a Pokemon tattoo. I obviously know what Pokemon Concierge is. But if you had to explain it to somebody who did know what it was, not being me, because I obviously know what it is. This is for other people. What is Pokemon Concierge?
So
is it's a TV show?
Yes, it's a TV show. And there's like this little island resort for Pokemon, where, you know, Pokemon just kind of get their own little vacation while their trainers are away. Hmm. And
it's cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it December or January?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, one thing before you talk about the plot, the I think when you first see it, the big selling point of it is it has this like stop motion style animation, and it's very like pretty looking, and like it, there's a lot of detail in the production of it on its own, like the actual craft of it. It looks really cool, but yeah, but
it's on Netflix. Again, I mean, I knew this. I'm just saying, like, I'm pretending to be intrigued for the person who's listening who doesn't know. I know all about it. I mean, yeah, Pokemon Concierge, duh, seen it.
So yeah, you've got your main character is kind of your like classic millennial, tired of their job, looking to get out.
She's got burnout.
Burnout. So she goes to work at this Pokemon resort, and you know, each episode there's a Pokemon that comes to the resort that's maybe a little shy. So it's kind of her mission to help them come out of their shell.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they go on. They have like various little adventures.
Yeah, it looks rad. Yeah. It has a really cool visual style. Again, I've seen it before. I'm not seeing it for the first time. I've seen it before.
I'm hoping they announced season 2, so I'm hoping when Pokemon Day comes around next month, we'll get maybe some more details on that.
It was something that I wish that there were more episodes of it. There were just episodes of her like solving different problems for different Pokemon, you know, like more long running thing. But maybe
I feel like it's a good opportunity to like feature different Pokemon that maybe don't get featured as much.
Yeah, it feels like a good recipe to make a bunch of episodes. You know, take a Pokemon, what's their problem? You know, like let's solve it type thing. But maybe, you know, because you can tell they spent a lot of time on it still, even though there's only 3 episodes. So I don't know the budget of it, but maybe we can get a slightly longer season. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's cool. In February 2024, Netflix ordered more episodes. So,
okay. Fingers crossed.
And that was just less than a month after it was released. So when are they coming? We don't know, but hopefully soon.
Fingers crossed, Pokemon Day.
That's cool. Pokemon Concierge. Okay. Yeah, that's fun. Looks rad. Again, I mean, it looks rad if you're looking at it for the first time, which again, is not me. Seen it before. Well aware of this.
You're a pro, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Gu? What's your favorite adaptation? Is it also a TV show or is it something different?
No, it's a movie. And I actually think I think they got it right pretty early on. And I'm actually going to say my favorite adaptation is the Super Mario Brothers movie. Mm. The original one from 1992.
Hold on.
Something like that.
No. No, yeah. You're not going to say that.
No, So I love this movie. Not ironically or anything. There was a period of time where I guess I sort of did when I started watching it again. And I was like a little bit embarrassed that I was kind of enjoying it. But then I've kind of grown to love it. I think I know one that it's not a good adaptation necessarily of any specific Mario game. I that's the first point of contention I know people will come at you with.
Well, but the tagline on the movie poster, this ain't no game. So I mean, people need to people need to show up knowing it's not the game. Yeah, this ain't no game. This is something new.
But yeah, I always I like, and maybe this was because when it came out for me, I was really young. So like when I saw it, I played Mario's my first game I ever played. But to me, like it was actually like one of the first things I understood of like the concept of an adaptation, because like. I knew this was different than the other Mario stuff, but like it didn't matter to me. It was like equally Mario to me, you know. And then as I got older, I was like, okay, yeah, that's it was weird. And then I didn't watch it for a while. And then now I've seen it a bunch in my adult life. And when I watch it, I'm like, yeah, it's not a faithful adaptation of Super Mario Brothers, but I also like don't. Like need that to exist. Like I don't care if there's an accurate Mario movie, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. So
yeah,
when the new one came out, I mean, I saw it and I thought it was nice. You know, it was like a nice movie. You know, sweet little. Like if I had kids, I would love to take them to see it. But I was like
theaters day one. We saw the new one, but I also remember being in the theaters for the original movie being taken to see that as well. So I've seen both in theaters. But yeah, I guess I mean that leads into like yeah, exactly that conversation. Like, does a good or does a quality or is it a requirement that an adaptation be like so faithful to the source material, or can you still have fun and do something different? Like, I guess obviously, yeah, you can do something different. It doesn't have to necessarily follow the same blueprint or formula. If anything, you know, you would hope that it. Something could spread its wings a little bit to take advantage of the medium that it is being adapted into. So like, yeah, this 93 Mario movie, you know, having differences, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I don't know that they necessarily put it all together correctly. I think that, you know, maybe still feels like there's some scotch tape holding it together at points, but it was exciting.
That is the other big thing that people bring up is that that one had the development of that movie or whatever, the production of it's kind of a production nightmare. And I think sometimes you could tell, but I think it just has a lot going for it that it really gets me. Like, obviously, like I think the style they do have, the sort of like cyberpunk sort of mm-hmm. like post-apocalyptic world and like the set looks really cool. Like it just, I think it has a cool design, even though it's not like Mario. I like the cast. People talk about some people like, can you believe so-and-so plays this? And I'm like, I think they're great in the movie. I think they all have, even though I know maybe that's helped, but I read they all hated it. They were all like drinking on set and stuff. But I think everybody has like great charisma mm-hmm. and like, good chemistry together, like Mario and Luigi and John Leguizamo and Samantha Mathis, I think are good together in the movie, and the Koopa cousins and Dennis Hopper, like they're all fun in the movie. And then finally, I think I know at one point Ed Solomon has a writing credit on it, who wrote Bill and Ted and Men in Black. And I think there's some funny jokes in the movie. And I think that I can tell they have a similar kind of humor to his style. So while I probably wouldn't put it on the level of something like those other two movies, I think it has a lot of really funny jokes in it. And it's, you know, it's kind of got a dumb plot or whatever, but I think it's still cool. I don't know. I think it's funny and it's a good time.
Yeah. That's interesting. I did not think you were going to be serious about that, but you know, I'm not going to PU somebody's Wii U, you know? I think it's cool. I do remember being like, as a kid, like, excited for that. I mean, I remember having comic books with like ads in the back of them, like promoting it. Like it was everywhere. It was one of those things, like when I was, you know, that age, like having, like going to the grocery store, there'd be like trading cards that you'd buy. And like, you know, me and my brother and my cousin would have like a binder where we would try and collect all the trading cards because it would form a giant picture, or it would have like more information on the characters or have some type of activity card or something. And we used to buy a ton of those for that movie. And I don't remember being disappointed with it as a kid. I think that then growing up, like, you know, I just realizing that, like, it didn't necessarily, like, have the same, like, vibe that I would expect from a Mario movie if you were to do it. But, like, I still luckily, like, wasn't at a point where, like, something... I wasn't allowing, like, you know, newspaper reviews to, like, paint my image of it and everything. It wasn't until I was older that, like, you know... Like, yeah, I think I'm more from, like, a production standpoint that it wasn't completely, like... Even its original idea was, like, overwritten 3 or 4 different times before we got what we got out of that. And, like, hearing, like, Bob Hoskins being, like, drunk on set and stuff like that, you know, not necessarily, yes. like, into the what he was doing there. But, like, yeah, I mean, what we got is what we got. I mean, it is a very unique adaptation. And, you know, maybe it scared Nintendo not to license, you know, an outsourcing of their movie for 30 years, potentially. Mm-hmm. But it did exist. And, you know, I think it was considered technically a commercial failure, like, shortly after, you know, its release. Yeah. But I think over times and, like, in cult status, you know, that it has for, you know, people, whether it is ironically or not, like, buying it and looking back on it, at this point, it's probably made back, you know, the money, if not, you know, more than that. So you can't really call it a failure anymore, I don't think. But yeah, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. I do a podcast, virtual theater, with my buddy Andy, where we watch video game movies and stuff, and it's our collective favorite movie. Mm. And it's sort of, actually, I kind of feel we kind of reevaluated some movies early on too, because we started watching and we were really focused on like specific, like, weird plot things about, like, the Mortal Kombat movie or something, and then. I think eventually we watched enough where it kind of broke us and we're like, I don't know. These are fun. These are silly. They're fun. You know, I mean, there's some that are truly, truly bad, but I don't know. I would kind of back a lot of movies, like the Street Fighter movie and Mortal Kombat and the Mario movie. Like, I guess all the early ones, I kind of actually like a lot of those movies more. Like, I've gained an appreciation for them after watching some later, at because we eventually got to a point where certain movies, like, they figured out, like, a formula to making certain movies, and so instead of, like, these crazy goofy weirdo movies, we just started to get these real, like, slogs of movies, like Assassin's Creed, I think, is horrible. And so I'll always take, like, the really weird like experimentational, but, you know, like, we're just doing, it's more of like a cartoony kind of movie. I always prefer that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, well, yeah, did not expect that from you. I thought for sure it was going to be something different, but you know, that's why we do it. That's why we ask the questions, you know.
Yeah. Do you actually? I wanted. Well, McKenna, do you feel this way too? I did want to ask. Like, do you think, like, being accurate to the source material is always important or sometimes important, or
no, whatever? I think as I'm older now, I think that I'm okay with that. I think that there would definitely be, I think I was at a certain age, or, like, you know, if, like, I've always wanted, like, a Metal Gear Solid movie, you know, and I'm, like, essentially thinking in my head, like, yeah, it'll just be shot for shot, like the original Metal Gear Solid game, of course, like, and if they deviate from that, it'll be bad. So what are they thinking? And then, no, like, if you get, like, the capture of, like, the spirit or the tone of a story or of, like, a character, really, you know, like, I'm down for anything, you know, if it's entertaining or exciting and all that stuff. So, like, yeah, I don't think it has to be, like, I would be totally fine if, like, I had a favorite, you know, game or franchise or something that was being adapted into a different medium. Like, I would be okay with it being, like, radically reinterpreted if there was still something that, like, when I saw it, like, it evoked, you know, similar feelings, or, like, it gave me, like, reminded me of something, or even nostalgia for something. Like, I would be okay with that. So I would not be putting unfair expectations on an adaptation to be, like, a one-to-one carbon copy. I would more so encourage it to be maybe unique, to take advantage of whatever medium that is, if it means I can still, like, tell what it is supposed to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you feel similar?
You know, I think an adaptation should sort of capture the essence of something, but like, a video game tells a story differently from a movie, from a TV show, from a novel, from a comic. So
I will admit, I don't think the Mario movie captures the essence of Mario.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, they got Yoshi, yeah. right? But, you know.
They do have Yoshi. That's an incredible moment in the movie, actually. We did a screening 1 year at the Zelda Dungeon Marathon of the movie with, like, a dozen people. After it was done, we all were watching it. There's a moment where Yoshi comes in and spits out his tongue and wraps his leg around one of the villains. And everyone watching was like, yeah! And then a second later, she stabs Yoshi with something, and everyone watching was like, oh, it was crazy. So that was that's how powerful that movie is. People love that little realistic Yoshi.
Yes. That extra special effect from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, right. Oh, it does look kind of bogus next to Jurassic Park thing.
You know, don't worry, it was, you know, a decade before Jurassic Park was released, so they didn't have the technology then. Oh, wait, it was essentially a year apart. Year. Oh, no.
Actually, Yoshi looks okay in there.
But yeah, that's interesting. Okay, cool. Well, I think that was a good conversation. We've not actually done that question yet for an episode of the show, so thanks for picking that one out. I like the idea of talking about these adaptations and everything. I was going to share one of mine, but I couldn't necessarily settle on one. I don't usually typically answer the questions myself anyway, but I was a fan of like those Dead Space, like horror games, you know, like PS3 era. I mean, obviously it's kind of continued and there was a remake of it recently, but leading into the game, there was some comic books that were like prequel stories and all that stuff. And they had like, they weren't like phoned in by just like some cash grab, like artist and writer that you didn't know. There was, this writer at the time, Anthony Johnston, he was writing this book called Wasteland, which is like this 60 issue, like epic that is like super rad. And I love that comic. And Ben Templesmith, who was the artist for like 30 Days of Night. And he's done a bunch of cool stuff. Like he's a really rad artist, but it was essentially, no matter what it was going to be called, it was going to be a great comic book with the two of them together. And I was on board with it, but knowing it was like this prequel to this game that I enjoyed and all that stuff. Like I loved like the outside of the video game world they were making for Dead Space initially. And then there was a few more graphic novels. There was an animated movie. There was, you know, the two essentially quicker sequels. And there was a Wii spinoff, Dead Space Extraction. That was like an on-rail shooter. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. I remember that.
It was just like suddenly there was an overabundance of Dead Space stuff. So it kind of got too hard to follow at one point. But I loved those initial comics and everything. I thought that was really well done and rad for a new property. It wasn't adapting something, you know, that was decades old or something that people were nostalgic for. It was like, hey, we're going to do this video game, but let's also like, this is a story that doesn't need to have a lot of action. It could just kind of set up like the world and kind of tell you a little bit about what's happening in the destination you end up on in the video game before it all goes to hell. And so it just was, if you participated in it, you got to kind of expand the world and see more about it. But if you didn't, the game was still fun and entertaining and told its story completely. It was just, extra flavor, you know, for those people who wanted that stuff. So I always enjoyed that.
I think that's a cool way you can do that with different stuff too, is like make it doesn't work for everything. I do think sometimes you just got to go like, this is its own thing, but it's cool when you sometimes make like, this is like a story in the same like canonical universe of the game or whatever, whether it's a comic or a movie or show. Like if that's handled well, that can be fun for the fans, and if you make it unique enough where like people don't really need to know the games, that could be good too, you know.
Yeah.
Did you like Spirits Within?
No. Saw it in theater, and that's funny that you're saying that. I'm literally writing about that now. I've been doing a bunch of research on that and everything. The retro game zine, another project I've, you know, been doing. The third issue for that is going to be all about Final Fantasy XI. And so that idea was all cooked up by Sakaguchi while he was living in Hawaii at Square USA, where they were spent the 4 years like rendering and producing Spirits Within. So he made that like big flop of a film, but at the same time, they were cooking up ideas for this online Final Fantasy that would ultimately go on to be the most successful Final Fantasy, or I mean, financially most successful Final Fantasy property, which is crazy because everybody remembers like the big flop that that was and how he essentially stepped away from Square after that. But ultimately, he planted the seeds for this thing that would be their biggest, most profitable thing secretly years later and all that stuff. And so thinking about that recently, like that's like that idea kind of came to me like, man, we don't really think about it in that same lens. We think of this failure and him walking away. But in reality, he was, while he was in Hawaii and he was kind of like separated from, you know, like friends and folks from home, he discovered online role-playing games and EverQuest and things like that and thought, hey, we should do something like this that, you know, connects the world and kind of like, let's see what this does. And so he started to put together a team and that evolved and became that. So like, that's still running to this day and it still requires a subscription from players. And there's like 40 something thousand players even today, like, you know, 20 something years later, like it's financially like a huge success for them when, you know, it was out of the ashes of this studio that lived in Hawaii for a few years that produced the financial failure flop of a film. That's a lot of F's. That was alliteration. But yeah, so I'm not a big fan of that movie either, but did see it in theaters. My brother and I were like, yeah, let's go see this. This is going to be rad. Alec Baldwin, CG animation, Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. And there was just nothing. Not a chokeable inside. Yeah, yeah, James Woods. Yeah.
James Woods. Yeah.
Burn his house down.
I kind of liked it actually, but I've only seen like, or I've only played like 3 Final Fantasy games. So I was like, this is definitely different. I can tell, but
yeah,
I can't even remember. It's been years since I've seen it. So, but I was sort of into it.
Yeah. All the games are different and you know, like there is always at least a theme. Like there is always like, there is some connective tissue and like a theme that kind of like, you know, you have in the Final Fantasies, like with like crystals in this world and like uniting heroes against a threat or like, you know, a party of,
there isn't a damn chocobo in there.
Yeah. There was none of like the, what you would expect type scenario. So it was even as an adaptation or a spinoff, it was like, it also didn't quite get the DNA, but yeah. Oh, well.
We'll have to watch it, McKenna.
The spirits within. hold your breath. Cool. Well, thank you all for joining me on this episode. Then that'll wrap it up for your favorite gaming adaptations. We'll have you on a future episode for sure. Spoiler alert, we'll record that episode right after this and then it will be banked for a future date. But these people don't know that. 10 of them don't know that. So thank you all. Anything you wanted to say or wrap up before we end the show? Any plugs or anything besides obviously listening to Flashback 64 and checking out the Patreon?
Yeah, Flashback 64. I guess shout out to Virtual Theater as well too. We do like one a month, so we've been going for years and years and years now, and I can't even remember. I'm probably embarrassed about some of the early episodes. like I said, don't go listen to our newer ones. But I think next we're gonna cover the Borderlands movie. We're not like contemporary. We're not a good podcast. Like a movie comes out and we're like, we'll cover that in like 2 years, but this might be the most contemporary movie we've covered in a minute. So I'm not looking forward to it. That movie looks horrible, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
it
does. Yeah.
I've watched worse, I think. So.
All right. Well, then we'll catch you all on a future. Thanks, y'all.